Hello, everyone, and welcome to a new Smart Firefighting miniseries created during the Phase 5 of the First Challenge, hosted at the Muscatatuck Urban Training Center. The First Challenge focus is to produce marketable prototypes that demonstrate indoor localization tracking of first responders within 1 meter accuracy without any pre-deployed infrastructure. Many of you heard stories from Phase 4, and here in Phase 5, the challenges were increased by including multiple responders, longer durations, and longer distances. In these conversations, you will hear from many of the entrepreneurs, first responders, and team members involved that address these challenges and opportunities of X, Y, and Z axis tracking from multiple perspectives around scalability, usability, affordability, and more. This challenge is administered by the Indiana University Crisis Technology Innovation Lab and funded by the NIST Public Safety Communication Research PSCR Division. Also, consider putting the NIST 5x5 conference on your calendar, located in Chicago, June 25th to 27th, 2024. Enjoy this deep dive into first responder tracking technology, and please reach out with your thoughts. Sitting here on day two alongside Johan Bayo, who is the CEO of AR Cortex. Johan, how are you doing today?
I'm doing very well. Nice to see you again.
So you're not from here, are you?
No, I still have my strong accent from France. I've been 27 years in the U.S., but came originally from France.
And from France to the U.S. to here in Muscatatuck, Indiana. What are you doing here?
Yeah, so I am for the last 2 days and another day tomorrow. We are part of the FRST final phase where they test different tracking teams that have been competing on 5 different phases, and we were one of the company invited as an external innovation company showcasing some visualization technology to show the track recorded by those company.
Yeah, I think your presence here among everyone here, but particularly yours, is really interesting and exciting, where a lot of the competitors here are working to nail that dot on the map of localization, which is great and super important. And I think today, and seeing the challenge, the competitors is showing me that the technology is now here. It works, it's proven. But now we're kind of looking at the user interface for the first responder in terms of what they're wearing, but then also how are we seeing it? How are incident commanders experiencing it and taking this data that's being created and using it in some kind of capacity to drive better decisions? And I think that one path is that's where you come in. I saw you standing behind the prison yesterday with your tablet, and I was able to see with AR, you know, looking through the tablet of seeing real-time dots moving in over the screen, and then you could also point down and see a map of this building. So talk to me about kind of your solution, how it works, and kind of how it's displaying information for incident commanders.
Yes, so we have a bit of a different solution that what is being used traditionally. Traditionally, you might want to use a display that show a map or a 3D model of the real world to give you some context about the surrounding real world so that you can place information overlaid on this map. But what is those maps have some value into showing what's going on in that environment, it still rely on the human to actually map this information into the actual real world environment. What you see on the map is just a reproduction of the real world. And so the human, like when they use Google Map, is identifying things on the map and mapping them inside the real world. So for example, it sees a church, and recognizing the church in the real world can basically use that mapping to be able to place the information that is shown on the map into the real world. So it requires this human in the loop, and it takes a bit of time for the human to do that. Some are very well spatially oriented as a gift, and some are not. So for some people, that's very difficult, for example, to recognize the direction where to go using just Google Map when it's oriented due north. But if Google Map, for example, has just the orientation of your compass, they can do it a bit better. So it's kind of going into that direction. So we superimpose the information directly onto the real world so that the ambiguity and this mapping is removed. And we can see what the information pertains directly onto the real world.
Well, and it's interesting here that this NIST-funded challenge for indoor localization, there are other competitor teams like you from the Xeria challenge, which was more AR-focused, I believe.
Correct, AR and IoT.
And then there's the Commanding Tech challenge competitors here, and they were more VR-focused for taking in different data streams and information to provide a real-time incident command sort of station, in a sense. And I think I love the analogy of and, not or. Between AR and VR, it's sometimes AR makes a lot of sense and is appropriate. And VR, same situation. And whether it's sometimes training, sometimes learning, therapy, or incident command operations, I mean, they all sort of make sense. But yeah, I'd love to hear your thoughts, kind of like the difference between AR and VR and kind of how they all, how both have a time and a place for things like this.
Sure, sure. So the VR is kind of building on top of this map, this 2D map concept, but you see it in 3D and it's very well adapted to a large scale event like a wildfire, for example, or things that are at a city scale, while augmented reality pertain to displays the information onto the real world. So it's much more for a smaller range use case. So if you are next to a building and you try to see information about that building or to see the location of firefighter, AR makes a lot of sense. Especially also if you do not have this context information that you usually use on a map, such as the satellite imagery or the 3D model of the building, AR can still be used because all you do is have a view of the real world, which provides you the context. And by the way, it's always up to date, not like a map can be outdated or a 3D model. It's always up to date and look like the real world. And in this case, using AR makes a lot of sense. But if you have, for example, a forest fire where some of the units are miles away and some of the fire happening are, you know, miles away, then using VR make much more sense. And AR can be still used, but really in the same way that you will use VR to show a map, for example, on a table, tabletop. So it's really an extension of what you do in VR that you can do in AR, but that's not the main use case of AR. It's kind of a toy use case of AR. AR really is useful when you want to annotate the real world and associate that information unambiguously and do it in a way that you don't have to do this mapping between a display that shows a map or a 3D model and the real world. So that's kind of the difference between the two. So VR really is good to for large scale and AR is for small scale. And then some of the things like the training aspect that you mentioned that is traditionally more done in VR actually can be done in AR as well. So once you have an AR display that can display information such as the location of different people or IoT sensor and their data and things like that, you can also use the same kind of overlay that you use in VR without the background, because the background is here, the real world is already here, and so you can simulate other firefighter or some victim or some fire that you superimpose on the real world to create a scenario that can, for example, be used for training. So this is not yet done a lot, and that's the direction where we are definitely going.
So VR and AR, same, but very different.
Very different, exactly.
Yeah. Well, thanks for painting that picture. And I mean, as you were talking, my brain is kind of running in circles about truly, it's cool, again, thinking about, I was watching you take this real-time data from all the competitors or going to cloud, and it was coming from the cloud to your device. So seeing that, now tomorrow we're going to be watching that with the VR teams as well from the Commanding Tech Challenge. Uh-huh. But from your perspective, I know you've been in this immersive learning, immersive XR space, you could call it, for quite some time now. It's October 2023. You hear that phrase, where the puck is going? And like sort of where do you see it in the next 1, 5, 10 years? I'm interested in your thoughts in terms of how the work that you've been working on with the Xeria Challenge, Humanity Tech Challenge, and then the data that's coming from a first challenge stuff, like where do you see it going?
Yes, so I work in AR specifically much more than VR, despite they are very similar field. they have very different challenge. For example, the tracking in VR does not need to be as precise as in AR because you don't see the real world in VR. But the real world move exactly like your head is moving, so there is no error to be made. But so I specialize much more in AR, and that has been, you know, an area that has been really only used by a researcher up to, I would say, around 2015-17, when Apple and Google started to commoditize the technology needed to do in AR for AR by allowing phone to do AR, and specifically vision-based tracking, something called SLAM, that they deliver in their phone for free as part of the hardware. And so the phone is able to localize itself in space in 6 degrees of freedom. This was impossible before unless you put many different components, something that was very expensive. You work with research, a laboratory, and, you know, take 6 months to make happen. So that was really, I think, the point where AR became a technology that the public became aware of in addition of VR, and, you know, started to have some offering for developer. And so we are 5 years later, and now you can see Apple, Microsoft, and soon Google and other companies that are smaller, that used to be smaller companies, are starting to be larger, like Magic Leap and so on, starting to put some eyewear out, because doing it from a tablet or a phone require you to always hold your arm up, and at some point you get tired. And for some profession like firefighter, it makes no sense at all to, you know, have something in your hand when you're trying to do some things. So I would say we are at the point with AR where we were probably in 2017 with VR, where VR was, you know, starting to be commoditized and having some display like the Quest, for example, that came, that became affordable for the public and things like that. So we are here at the point where the display are still pretty expensive, but within 5 years, I think we are going to have probably some displays that look more like your glasses, that are going to become something that you connect to your phone and potentially replace your phone at some point. So I think it's going to revolutionize how we do spatial computing. And, you know, it's going to, yes, replace your phone and be used not only by the lab and professional or firefighter, but actually used by people to do their day-to-day life, such as finding direction to the next location or playing game into the real world or things like that.
And when you think about what that means for a firefighter, a police officer, an EMT, I mean, I think a lot of times we hear this, tech is amazing, tech is going to solve all these problems. And then maybe over time, there's been a bad taste in certain people's mouth when tech has fallen short, or there's been some pitfall or roadblock. And of course, all this stuff takes time. But in your eyes, like, for, let's maybe focus on a firefighter. From what you just said, what does that mean for the day of a life in the firefighter compared to what they're doing now, compared to what they will be, how the operations will change in the future?
Yes, so that, you know, will allow them to respond faster to incidents by removing this mapping that is needed between a 2D or a 3D display that they use today as an incident command and the real world. So this can save seconds, sometimes minutes. That's the first point. The second point is with eyewear that are going to overlay things onto the real world, they'll be able to also operate hands-free instead of having to, you know, look at something on their wrist or carry something. So it's going to, you know, help them to respond faster in a more precise way, because they're going to be seeing the information more precisely and how it pertains to the real world. It's going to also help with training specifically on the real world. Today, when you want to create a training environment in VR, you have to create the world, you have to create some building, you have to create all kinds of things, when all you want to really train with are other firefighters, some victim and some fire, but you need all this background. So, but the background can be the real world. It's there and you can, you know, move around in VR. You cannot move around because your display is opaque, or even if you see through some camera, it's not something I will run around with. In AR, when you have some glasses that are actually optical see-through, such as many of the glasses today, including the HoloLens, not the Vision Pro from Apple, which is a video see-through, so that's a bit of difference. But most of the glasses that are used by professional or defense are optical see-through, so you actually see the real world through the optics. So that allow mobility, that allow to use the real world as a support of information and to add the information for operation that you need, such as IoT sensor, the location of other people, things of interest, or things that look synthetic, things that look realistic, such as other firefighter or victim and things like that, to create a training scenario. So both for operation and training.
So a lot of exciting change.
Yeah.
But I think that's also one of the words that I want to say. Change is one of the biggest challenges, I think, within public safety. And I know a lot of this stuff is exciting, but I'm interested in your thoughts in the change management of this, mm-hmm. in terms of getting firefighters, law enforcement, EMTs to go from the current SOPs and protocols of 2023 to how this is something new that can help you save time, save money, do your job better so you can come home at night. You know, I think that's, everyone gets that, but there's still the kind of, how do we go about doing it? And you've talked a lot about AR and VR for real time or training or a range of applications, but how have you approached, or what would you say about how the industry should approach change management of this new tech for the public safety service?
Yeah, I can give you some thought, but you know, I don't think I am the right authority for that, because I'm we are working much more on the future and the R&D side of things and piloting some things. We have not really experienced pushing a product out. There is companies that do that much more than we do, but you know, there is definitely things related to regulation, things that needs to be understood in terms of what kind of standard or requirements some device needs to have. And you know, there is probably a bit of work in that. There is the acceptance from the end user and the fact that technology is still heavy, it's big, sometimes it does not work fully, it gets in the way. So this needs to be, you know, tamed from a R&D and production point of view. But I think also needs to be introduced slowly to the end user in a way that it really shows them the value. So again, here, you know, I think this will be probably introduced more by companies that are maybe less working on R&D and the future of AR, and more using what works very well with AR today, such as, for example, if you want to augment an image, put something on an image, this is commoditized and work in many use cases, in many different conditions. Being able to use eyewear inside a helmet of a firefighter is not done yet. It's not ruggedized. It gets in the way. It will have problem of battery, of you know, heat and things like that. So I think maybe what in that aspect, maybe what makes more sense to start to introduce those technologies the same way that VR is being used is to use AR for training, where there is less risk of the technology getting in the way or not working, to show training first, maybe not on the real world at a large scale, but on equipment that they use, so that you could show what are the different parts of this equipment, how to use it on the real equipment, more than creating that in VR and having to reproduce the equipment from 3D model and all these things. So it's probably something that will start to introduce the technology, and I'm confident that companies like MSA and other will probably go in that direction and start to introduce the technology. There is a way we can also introduce the use of AR itself during some training scenarios that are done in VR or AR, where we show when this display will be available, what they can do. And so, you know, you can use VR to simulate what you will see through some AR glasses on top of the real world, for example. So that might be some way to, you know, go in that direction. So there is, yes, this acceptance. And then there is the fact that the technology needs to also evolve, right? It needs to be recognized. It needs to work better. But, you know, all this technology are coming very, very quickly to a point where they are going to be working. We can see that with the tracking technology that are presented at this event. We have seen very big progress in eyewear, you know, becoming from a fridge to something you can actually wear on your head. It's not yet in the form factor of glasses, but it's coming very quickly.
It's an exciting roadmap. As I kind of said that word earlier, I mean, it's all exciting, and I think it's important, and I challenge everyone listening to think about how can we continue to take the lessons learned from these challenges, from the Chariot commanding to the first challenge, and reach out to these teams. Reach out, you know, Johan, we've talked a bunch over email, and like, you're extremely approachable, and I know you're open to collaborate. So, I mean, if you're doing work in AR, Johan's the guy. So reach out to Johan, and I actually, you know, Captain Kirk McKenzie had introduced us. You know, he's also deep in AR. And so I think just encourage everyone listening to really take advantage of all these different NIST programs that are happening, and especially try and collaborate with the teams. And Johan, if I could give you one sort of a final opportunity, if it's sort of a mic drop, what would you, do you have any quote, question, challenge, or insight of sorts that you could leave us here with today? And it could be, you know, a message to aspiring entrepreneurs or firefighters, but you know, anything else you could leave us with here today?
Yeah, I mean, regarding collaboration, I think it's there is an important point is that many companies have been trying in the past to do everything. I think this new metaverse and AR and VR world so big that it doesn't make sense for a company unless you are, you know, Apple, Microsoft, and Google to do the whole stack. It needs to go through some collaboration. So collaboration is always something I welcome myself. Unfortunately, there is a reality of, having investors that don't want you to necessarily share your IP, but there is way to collaborate through some open interface and some standards that can be defined. So yes, the industry should embrace that. And you know, you should try to make a piece of the puzzle and specialize in it and do it well. But another thing I'd like to make a point of, and I think that is that something I see a bit different in that challenge, is that a lot of the competition that have existed and challenge are often, you know, trying to have each competitor deliver a piece of technology that often is not going to interface with others. And that leave, you know, the end user, the firefighter, with a mess into trying to choose one of those technology. One thing that I embrace here in this challenge is that, one, they've been trying to push really a company to not do R&D, but push toward a product that in the end is going to be something that first responder can buy, and favoring the collaboration between company doing tracking and company doing the visualization, for example. And, you know, kind of abstracting their tracking measurement so that different company could just read that and display it. So that's why we are here. And those kind of initiative, I think, are going in the right direction for first responder to, in the end, have, some solution that interface with each other and are going to, you know, not require them to choose one technology stack or another. So I think we need more of those.
We do. And thanks for being the tip of the spear and leading the charge. And Johan, always a pleasure.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks for listening to today's episode. What did you think? What'd you learn? Hopefully something, right? Please reach out on social media with your thoughts on this episode and any other suggestions for future content. We look forward to capturing more important stories across public safety and are here at your service.